Hello everyone, this is Songs from a Room, an intimate singer-songwriter showcase where I, Bob Palos, invite very talented artists to the podcast for a one-on-one. We'll learn a little about each artist, what inspires them, what brought them to play the music they play, and the moments that led them to write the songs they wrote. Then finally, to play me a song from a room.
Two themes, but I'll probably just sing you a couple of New York songs since we're all New Yorker songwriters.
Yeah, types. We're here in New York.
Exactly.
In your apartment.
Yep.
All right, I'm here with Christian Rutledge, and he's been gracious enough to invite me into his apartment, and we're going to listen to your songs. And
awesome.
Yeah, sounds do the songs. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll start with a little bit about you.
Yep.
You're a musician living in New York.
Yeah.
Were you born and raised in New York? You moved here?
No, I was actually born up in Canada.
Oh, Canadian.
And yeah, I'm a Canuck, and I grew up mainly in a city called Edmonton in northern Alberta, played music all my life. My mom really instilled a love for music in me. And then I just did it all the time. And then I, after high school, I left Edmonton. I moved just south of Edmonton to a city called Calgary, which more people tend to know about. And I went to college there for a year. Then I quit college and joined a punk band, which every parent's dream. or got into the punk scene. Our band was not really so much a punk band. It was kind of like this Red Hot Chili Peppers
thing. Oh, yeah, the jam punk or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. It was not great, but we had a lot of fun, and that's when I got just kind of swept away by the indie music scene and fell in love and was suddenly in this. You know, before that, I'd only kind of gone to big concerts mm-hmm. in like hockey arenas kind of thing.
So you saw your first basement show?
And I, yeah. Seriously, and I was like, and I was lucky enough to be in this band and sort of started playing in them right away. Like house shows, basement shows, weird little dirty ass punk clubs.
Yeah. And you're mostly a drummer then, right?
No, at that time I was like singing and writing songs. But I, growing up as a kid, I had played drums a bunch. But then someone showed me three chords and I was lost.
Yeah.
So I started writing songs, terrible, terrible songs. and found three guys who were willing to back me up. Not really. Like we were a band. We were a collaborative band. But so it was more just jumping around, screaming at a crowd full of people. But the incredible thing about the punk scene that was so amazing was there was like kind of no barrier between the band and the crowd, right?
Yeah,
like,
you're in there.
Totally.
You're like, in them.
They're literally coming up on stage and running in a circle and bashing your mic into your mouth and then jumping yeah. back into the crowd, right? So I just was so in love with the punk scene. So we did, that band had some success. We toured around like Western Canada and the sort of Pacific Northwest. And it was amazing. And then I actually entered a green card lottery in Canada and won a green card.
Oh wow!
Way back when, and which is weird, like totally.
Is that like a yearly thing they do, or?
Well, it used to be, but this was the last year that they were doing it.
Oh wow!
For Canada, they still do it for a lot of countries. But so I moved to San Francisco because that's the only place in the States I knew anyone. Mm-hmm. And I went there for a number of years, and that's where I kind of pounded away there, tried to do the thing there, and then came to New York for a visit, fell in love with the city, moved out here, and now I've been here for like 22 years now, and it's been good. Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, you're always involved in the music scene the whole way through, right? You said you worked as you're an audio engineer?
I was, yeah. I was a recording engineer. When I moved to the city, I lucked out. It's a crazy story that we should tell sometime over beers. It's kind of long, but I got this dream job working in this recording studio. And that's where I kind of fell into my community. And so I met all of these really great people who worked on the production side, you know, engineers, mm-hmm. Producers, those types, and just general music industry types, but also a ton of artists because, you know, working with folks day to day. And those would be the folks who sort of became my community. So it'd be, you know, we'd work all day and night in the studio and then someone would have a show and this is in the days when the East Village and the Lower East Side was really where
popping.
Yeah, it was so And the studio was at Broadway and Bleecker that I was working at. It was called the Looking Glass Studios. And, you know, we just like after work, just go see shows. CB's was open when I got here.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Which was just at the end of Bleecker Street. Mm-hmm. So that's got like, to go down there.
Wow, you got to experience it. It's just everybody just only knows it in T-shirts.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Or in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
been to CB's in Vegas. Yeah, no, I saw the bathroom, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I got a tetanus shot afterwards, you know, as any sensible person would. It was awesome. And actually, the first time I moved to the city and I joined a band. Well, I was, you know, looking around for bands to join. I was just like, I'll do anything that's mm-hmm. even close to what I want to do. So I signed up as a guitar player for this like kind of pop punk outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were booking shows. And so the first time I set foot in CBGB's was to play a show. So I was pretty stoked about
Very
that.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then it was around for a few more years after that. But, you know, it's like fucking John Varvatos boutique now.
Yeah, sure, right? I don't even know.
So
yeah, wow. Well, yeah, so now you're 22 years in,
yeah,
playing music. You got a batch of songs, you're working towards an album.
Yeah So I like you were saying, you mentioned drums. I played got behind the kit and kind of did that for like 15 years here. Played with a lot of friends on a handful of records, mm-hmm. toured around a little bit. So that was what I was doing. And then just before the pandemic, I just was like, man, I need to write songs again.
Yeah.
So I started doing that. And I just got bit by the bug again all over. So I've been leaning into that for the last few years. And the songs have been coming at a good pace. And so I'm just kind of trying to let them keep coming, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they're great songs. You're such a great... clever writer, clever and meaningful writer.
That's very much appreciated.
Yeah, for sure. Let's hear a song.
Okay.
We'll get the audience a taste.
All right. Well, this is a little sort of love letter to New York kind of song. So, and it's called Coal Miner Songs. I load 16 pounds of gear on me before I even walk out my door. By the time I pick the tools and some lanterns up, it's likely 30, 40 more. I grab a hard hat and head to the platform where I'll meet the signal maintenance crew and ride the work stock into the bedrock to do the jobs only we can do. We don't sing coal miner songs down in the subway, but the tunnels sure can feel like a mine. I feel closer to my comrades in West Virginia most days than the Wall Street types I helped to get to work on time. I couldn't take a course at the college for doing surgeries down in the dark, but you need a little bit of physician in you to fix a 90-year-old part. It gets hard to find time with the family when your shifts are always nights and weekends, but that's the only time they'll shut down a station so we can keep the heart of this city beating. We don't sing coal miner songs down in the subway, but the tunnels sure can feel like a mine. I'm proud to be a part of the union, and I appreciate the folks at the hall, but the way they're carving into the contract soon, I won't see any overtime at all. And yet whenever the price of a ride goes up, us workers catch a whole lot of flack. And you can make me an offer on the Brooklyn Bridge if you believe we'll get a nickel of that. We don't sing coal miner songs down in the subway, but the tunnels sure can feel like a mine. I feel closer to my comrades in Harlan County
most days than the real estate broker selling condos I could never buy. In the city I grew up in, in the neighborhood that used to be mine.
All right.
I was just remembering as I was playing that, I think the first time I ever played that live was at open mic that you were hosting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that when you, oh yeah. You know, I think that's the first time I actually saw you was that song. And I was just like, yeah, it was just such a, made a New Yorker feel like American.
But I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
I mean, it just sometimes
depends on the day.
Yeah. But, you know, right. It's like this city is built up with a working class.
It's funny because there's a couple of things. So that song is kind of like a worker solidarity song, too. I'm a huge Billy Bragg fan and was as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, country music, folk music, and punk rock all have like this sort of line through them, from, you know, Pete Seeger up to Billy Bragg, up to, you know, Joe Strummer, and on, right? So that song is, there's a few things going on in it that were kind of unexpected, but I was thinking about sort of, you know, the blue collar folks, the folks, particularly folks who were in the subway. I remember there was a band that I saw here years ago that was like a country, doing a country thing. I didn't know their story, but we were in New York and the kid was singing like this coal miners, like daddy was a coal miner type song. This guy might've grown up in West Virginia. I don't know, but I just remember thinking it was so weird to be in New York and hearing that sort of thing. So, but like, the other thing about country music is like kind of everyone has to write a coal miner song. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Right? We all.
Yeah. Song hands about in a the truck.
Dirt. Songs about a truck.
Yeah.
Dog. Songs about a jukebox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw this guy do this thing years ago and I was sort of like, eh. It sort of felt inauthentic, you know, somehow. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's interesting. You know, we've got people who are, you know, working underground and, you know, doing the thing here too. So. And there's in the chorus there, you know, that, saying that these folks and I, you know, I'm not an MTA worker, but, that there's a line there for the working class, right? Whether you're in New York City or in, you know, Harlan County.
Still got the soot in your face and you're still clocking in and risking your life.
Right.
Just for.
Exactly.
So an engine can move.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's really, it's skilled labor. So I remember, Jesus, I'm forgetting the name of the hurricane that came through. Sandy came through. Yeah, exactly. So, after Sandy, all the, I remember the L train being down like forever. Yeah. Right. And, at that time, I forget how I heard this, but someone said, I heard from someone like, you know, these parts that they need to replace are like 100 years old under, you know, they were flooded. These tunnels were completely flooded. And now these parts were corroded by the seawater that got into the tunnels. And they're having to like rebuild these parts that are like 100 years old. There's no like, you don't call up the warehouse and like, hey, send me that 100-year-old part, right?
So the manifold.
Yeah. So these people are doing like this incredibly skilled labor and they're in there like actually building these parts. So there's actually a line in the song that says, you need a little bit of physician in you to build a fix a 90-year-old part. And that's what that's about, is this idea that like these people are down there doing real like technical skilled labor and it's not always recognized as such, you know.
Yeah. Beautiful. It's a great, what a great working man song.
Thanks.
I thought, you know, the one I first heard it, I thought you did welding. You know what I mean? I felt like it sounded so like experienced that I just assumed you were like in construction.
Well, I did grow up on a construction site because my house was constantly being renovated by my dad. but the city that I grew up in, Edmonton,
mm-hmm.
Is a pretty blue collar town. A lot of like oil field services because Alberta is, that's a huge part of the economy. So there's a lot of welders, pipe fitters, people working in resources, that kind of stuff. So it's not too terribly distant for me.
Yeah. It feels like you know it. You know it and you appreciate it. and you put it in words and music.
Thanks, man.
Yeah,
I'm trying.
So that's like going. That's going towards the New York. I Love New York album.
Yep.
Is that what you're gonna call it? No.
No. No.
Just like the.
The title's coming together.
But, okay, you're still working on that title.
Yeah.
That's yeah. I can't wait to hear it.
Thanks, man. Me too.
Yeah. How so is it laid down now, or you're like still just working on assembling?
Yeah. I think we're real close on picking the songs. You know, this is a very limited budget album, so.
So you want to be precise with each move.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I learned working in recording studios is show up as prepared as you can possibly be because you're on the clock. So,
you got to know that. You've seen it. You've seen him. Yes. Fall apart at the budget.
I have. I've watched people waste a lot of time in the studio.
Oh, wow.
Often it involves like a joint after dinner, and then things just go to shit. So there'll be none of that.
Yeah. All business. Yeah,
exactly. So, So Matt and I are just really working on making sure that we have all the songs straight. And then just going in. We're going to record it live, try and get everything down. They'll likely be overdubs, but we're trying to get all the basics, including the vocals, down
first take. I got it. Great, that's awesome. You definitely sound ready.
We're trying for it, so.
We're ready to be ready, which is more important.
Trying to be.
Should we talk about another song maybe?
Sure, if you want.
We can. Let's
trying to think what would be a good one to do. Let me do I'll do another New York City love song, but this one is a little more so this song, I think I mentioned a little while ago, my partner Allison and I moved a little more this year than we wanted to. So we made a move to Bushwick, and we ended up in a place with some pretty
loud.
It's just called noisy neighbors.
Yeah.
So and that didn't look like it was going to be resolved. So we immediately looked at ways that we could. Leave. It turned out that our lease was really favorable and our landlord was cool.
Okay.
Was
like,
if you don't want to be here, I don't want to try and force you to stay.
Bushwick can be a noisy bunch.
Yeah. So, and actually it's funny because I played this song in a few, places, shows and whatnot. And it's not unusual that someone who lives in Bushwick will come up to me and be like, dude, I like live next to a guy who's a drummer. Yeah.
I lived at the Tea Factory, all
right? Yeah, right, exactly. So
it was terrible.
Yeah. So the song I'm going to play is called Jesus Bushwick. And it's actually every word of it is a true story.
You can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, it goes a little something like this. So long, Bushwick, it's been real. I can't say it's been real fun. The thread you're pulling is my patience. And now that sweater's come undone. I heard you're hanging out with the boy who lives next door. While he plays his electric guitar, he plugs in at midnight and he'll strum that thing till 4 a.m. I can hear him out in the yard. So long, Bushwick, it's been hard. So long, Bushwick. It's not you. But you know what? It kinda is. Your new friends look so expensive. And all these bartenders are kids. And I can't remember when this place got so damn loud. I bet you'll say I just got old. And you might be right about that. You know I'm not too proud to admit. These days I'd rather stay at home. Come on, Bushwick, we both know that one of us has
got to go. Okay, Bushwick, let's be honest. You won't even know I'm gone. There's always one more stupid singer lining up to sing one more stupid song. And I'm sure you're whispering you're gonna be a star to everyone you run into. That boy next door who won't stop strumming that guitar all night. Hey, you should tell him he's out of tune. Jesus, Bushwick, get a room. Nobody wants to hear you too. I gotta get up and get to work here soon.
So that's Bushwick. That's my Bushwick experience.
That's all of ours in our 30s and up. Yeah, I'm still here, huh?
We escaped quickly.
Yeah. Everybody's strumming their guitar. I like how you called yourself out for a second.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I had, so we had a neighbor who, we had paper thin walls too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Shared walls with a dude who liked to turn up his amp and play in his apartment. But also one night when I wasn't around, but Allison was home. He and his girlfriend, or I think fiance at the time, came home drunk with a bunch of friends, hauled his amp out into the yard.
Oh my God.
Shared backyard at 2 a.m.
Have a fun little concert.
Turned it up. Yep. Yeah. And played until 4.
Jeez. It's like no consideration. Or like, why are you so, you know?
Yeah.
And then you'd like go out and I'm like, you're kind of suppressing me right now.
Totally. Like, dude, you know it's 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So.
Oh, man. The entitlement.
Well, cocaine's a hell of a drug, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true. So you got the hell out of there, huh?
Well, and don't get me wrong, I love Bushwick. And so some great restaurants mm-hmm. over there and great bars and clubs. Love being in Bushwick. I just don't want to live in Bushwick, or at least not. Yeah. Like, and I'm sure, like, I really liked our block because there were a lot of families who seemed like they'd been there for a long time. And
yeah.
I also felt like, these fucking kids moving in, you know, driving up rents and like, you know, I mean, I'm probably a gentrifier too, if we're being 100%
Yeah, I don't
honest.
Deny my own gentrification responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly. But and so I'm speaking from a place of extreme privilege here, but thinking about these families who are like, what's this kid with this goddamn guitar amp doing in the
back there's end? Like a six-year-old trying to sleep.
Yeah, totally, exactly. And there's like a school, like literally right there, an elementary school. So yeah, I love Bushwick. I love playing there. I love eating there and hanging out with friends. But that particular block that we were on just didn't work.
Kids ain't got no respect.
I know, right?
But yeah. Well, it was a great song. Yeah, I think I feel like I can identify with it. So I'm 37, just battling my descent from hipsterdom.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a long, painful fall, but you know, we all survive.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, it's a great song.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And those songs, how far apart are those songs from each other from when you wrote them?
They're a good distance, a couple of years. I've found... So when I started writing again, before I got behind the drums and kind of committed to doing that, sort of more playing in bands and doing that, I had a country band in the city here for a few years called Sandusky, and we played out and, you know, did the clubs and stuff, and it eventually just kind of fizzled. But that was where, I really like writing country songs.
Yeah.
There's something about the limitation of the genre for me. And for me, the pop country thing just doesn't do it for me. So I hearken back more to the folkier roots of
Just traditional songs.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, three chords and the truth, right?
Yeah, three chords and the truth.
So I knew that I liked that format and that sort of the shape of those types of songs. So I started writing country songs again when I was trying to come out of just being a drummer and do some more songwriting again. I didn't even know if I was ever going to play out. I just knew that I wanted to explore songwriting again. And it really kind of worked for me to go like the country Americana route again. So, but the city really informs, you know, I love New York City, and the space really informs my writing. You know, I spend a lot of time walking and just working on lyrics in my head when I'm walking. And so, you know, I'm in that space. So kind of this country music from the city thing feels like a space that I kind of feel like I'm inhabiting.
New York Americana.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like urban Americana.
Urban Americana.
Right?
Yeah, no. I see a surge of that too in New York right now. There is like a very big Americana movement. I mean, I love it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I grew up, my dad used to play honky tonk records and I hated it.
Yeah.
And then you grow up and those honky tonk songs are still in your head, you know what I mean? And I love them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I know that there are, I haven't been yet, but there's a big like honky tonk party that goes on. I think they move it around, but up in Queens.
Honky tonk in Queens. That's at Gashier Hall.
Is it?
Yeah. They do that one. Yeah, it's really fun. And, you know, people are hungry for it.
Yeah.
They love it. They dress up for it.
Yeah, totally.
Like people
it's fun, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, so one of the things I talked about earlier, I don't know if we were on tape yet, but about how like punk rock, there's like no barrier between the stage and the band. And I think a big part of like the honky tonk thing is that like everyone's dancing.
Yeah.
And it's not about like everyone just standing there and staring at the stage while someone does a thing. When people are participating, when the audience is participating as well, the energy just shifts so much in a room.
Right? Yeah.
That it's like, it becomes this sort of collaborative live experience where there's a, like, not to be ooky spooky about it, but there becomes this energy that's like flowing between the audience and the band.
Mm-hmm.
That's to me just really compelling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do love that because it kind of feel like it kind of breaks New York out of its shoegazer phase.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah, and New York crowds, like if you're just a band in New York, I mean, everyone's so fucking jaded sometimes. Yeah. You're just standing there and you're like, I think we're doing okay.
Yeah.
they're just standing there like, impress us, right?
So, yeah, New York Americana.
Yeah, there is a cool movement. And, you know, you and I, when you got here, we were talking about Jalopy Theater, for example. Those guys do incredible stuff over there. There's an open mic over there that I go to a lot. And
on Wednesdays, I believe.
Yeah. The host over there, Wolf, is like a scary talent himself, just a really incredible guitar player and songwriter and singer. I'm not going to name any more names because I'd forget a few, and they've got so many great new friends over there who are just crazy talented. So you go over there, you just see like great music.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it has like a folky kind of Americana vibe, and it's great, you know,
because
New York can be a real DJ sort of kind of town, and it's nice to go and hear some organic, like
get some roots in there.
Yeah. It's cool.
Well, I think we got enough meat on this bad boy.
Right on. Well, thanks for coming over, man. This was super fun.
Thanks for having me. We'll be on eye for that album.
Yeah.
Christian Rutledge. Other links in the bio, probably.
Yeah.
If I do my homework right afterwards, after I piece this thing together. But thanks again for inviting me in your home, and thanks for sharing your songs.
Thanks for listening. This was Songs from a Room. Thank you to Ben Shapiro for providing all the theme music. Any inquiries, just email us at songsfromaroompodcast@gmail.com. Stay tuned, dialed up, and downloaded for the next episode. Bye.